Six music.
BBC Radio. Six music documentaries.
I'm Matt Everett, and this is The First Time, where we speak to some of music's most influential figures about the pivotal first moments that shaped their lives and careers, the events and songs that led them to be where and who they are today. Evan Dando was the golden child of the early 90s alternative music scene. He formed the Lemonheads, age 19, in his native Boston. Initially a punk band, the group would eventually find massive worldwide success in 1992 with their fifth country rock-tinged album, Shame About Ray. Since then, his life and career have enjoyed mixed fortunes. His well-publicised battles with drugs helped scupper any chance of a sustained mainstream success. But even with a quality control dial set firmly on whatever, he's still more than capable of producing some heart-wrenchingly beautiful moments of music, which is why he is today's guest, even though he's not the most, shall we say, coherent interviewee. I started by asking Evan, with limited success, about the first music he was aware of as a child.
You know, like that Motown heatwave, Don't Mess With Bill, you know, that kind of stuff. When I was about 5 years old, that's what I first got into.
Was that kind of like the first thing that you were kind of even aware of hearing?
Yeah.
What appealed to you about it?
I just like the songs, you know, making your bed in the morning and thinking, like, you hear the radio and thinking, right, this song could be about my life, you know, thinking that at a very young age, thinking that the way you can, you get into a song and you imagine it's about what you're experiencing, I think it's an important early step in pop.
Yeah.
Did your folks kind of play you a lot of music when you were? Was it just soul music?
Yeah, all soul music, pretty much. They all Eddie Kendrick's first solo record. It was big. The Isley Brothers, Stevie Wonder, James Brown, Al Green.
Shame on me, yeah. dedicate this song to little Junior Park. A cousin of mine is going on, but we'd like to kind of carry on in his name.
What was the first thing that you owned? What was the first time you actually kind of sort of possessed a piece of violin
Jackson
you had?
Jackson 5, Greatest Hits. I had enough records. They didn't have Jackson 5, my parents, so I wanted that. And
what was it about that song?
The Greatest Hits, there are a bunch of them on there, like ABC and I Want You Back and stuff and Never Can Say Goodbye. I don't know. I mean, they wouldn't have music like that because it was a bit childish, I guess. I didn't really buy any records until I was about 14 and went straight into the Stooges and Jonathan Richman, Modern Lovers, and the Velvets.
No fun, another day. No fun for my babe. No fun. No fun for my babe. No fun. No fun to be alone, walking by myself. No fun to be alone, but in love with nobody else.
One, two, three, four, five, six. Roadrunner, roadrunner, going faster miles an hour. Gonna drive past the stopping shop with the radio on. I'm in love with the modern world, Massachusetts when it's late at night, and the neon when it's cold outside. I got the radio on, just like a roadrunner going around the highway. I walked by the Stop and Shop, then I drove by the Stop and Shop. I like that much better than walking by the Stop and Shop, cause I had the radio on. I felt in touch with the modern world, I felt in love with the modern world. I felt in love with Winnipeg and Rosendale, cause I had the radio on. I felt like a roadrunner with the radio on. Now I said hello to the spirit of old 1956. It was patient in the bushes next to 57. Well, the highway was my only girlfriend, cause I went by so quick, and suburban trees were out there, and consequently it smelled like heaven. So I said roadrunner once, roadrunner twice. We're in love with this feeling now. It will be out all night. All right, now we can tell about our love.
That's a kind of big jump to go from Jackson 5 straight away to, like, your kind of garage.
Not really, though. Motown, Velvet Underground are very, very connected, really. When you think about Hitchhike, that song, it's the same as There She Goes Again. Dun, 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 dun.
When was the kind of first time you equated loving this music with kind of wanting to be a musician, or wanting just to play something?
I started when I was about 10 playing, but I never really thought I would do it as a job. I knew I liked words a lot, and so I liked English class, and so and it just sort of happened. We're doing it for fun, and some people at a radio station heard it. We made a single, and we got some gigs, and it was just easy.
You make it sound really, really quick. Because everyone knows as you as like a singer and a guitarist, but you were a drummer as well early on, weren't you? What was your first instrument?
The guitar.
And what was the first thing you learned to play?
It was Agua de Bebe by Brazil 66, strangely enough. It's pretty complicated, but I learned on a classical guitar.
Your love is rain, my heart the flower. I need your drink, or I will die. My very life is in your power. Will I wither and fade, or blossom to the sky?
Agua de bebé, agua de bebé, camarada. Agua de bebé, agua de bebé, camarada.
So already, like, the kind of, it was quite an eclectic taste in music you had.
Yeah, just my parents were really into music, so it was just sort of via them until I rebelled by getting into country and stuff.
That was a question I was going to ask you, actually. What was the first time you heard Graham Parsons, as you have?
88. My friend, I had written a song called Ride With Me, and my friend said, hey, that sounds like Graham Parsons. Have you been listening to him? I'd never heard him. And so he gave me the first two solo records and stuff, and Sin City by the Flying Reader Brothers. So it was like a backwards way of getting into it.
But that was like the start of a love affair, definitely.
Yeah, country music, yep.
What is it about Graham?
Just his voice is really good and really relaxed, and it taught me a lot about singing.
She came from the land of the cotton, a land that was nearly forgotten by everyone. She worked and she slaved so hard, a big old field her backyard in the Delta sun. Oh, but she sure could sing. Oh, she sure could sing. Then he looked down and he took a little pity. The whole town swore he decided he'd help her some. But he angel could sing. Yeah, she sure could sing. She had faith and she had believing. She led all the people together in singing, and she prays every night to the Lord up above, singing. To go away. She never knew what her life was to give her, and never had to worry about it for one single day. Oh my, but she sure could sing.
I'm Matt Everett, and you're listening to The First Time with Evan Dando.
Six Music.
BBC Six Music.
You're listening to The First Time with me, Matt Everett, on Six Music. This is where we speak to musicians about the pivotal first musical moments in their lives. My guest this week is Evan Dando, and from his band's breakthrough 1992 album of the same name, that was It's a Shame About Ray. Always someone who wears his influences on his sleeve, I asked him who were the first lyricists that inspired him early on in his career.
Just all the normal people, Dylan. Really early on, I really liked the Replacements and Husker Du.
So we've got, you started writing songs, you've kind of got this idea of forming a band. I mean, what would be the first rehearsal, I suppose, is the question. Can you remember what it was like walking and kind of, okay, right now, this is the first time I've got a band around me?
Yeah, I used to surf all summer until I was, I think, 16, and I decided to stay in the city and rehearse.
Where was this?
In Boston, and that was a big... a huge sacrifice for me, because my whole life was about surfing and skateboarding and skiing. So I just stayed in the city all summer just to practice for this one gig we had on August 18th, 86.
You remember the date?
Yeah.
And what was the rehearsal like?
We just rehearsed every day of all summer. It sounded like something falling down a really long staircase, basically.
And the gig, I mean, after all
that... It was good.
After all that build-up.
We actually had lots of people there, because we had really sort of unfair relationship with this radio station at Harvard Radio, because we had a bunch of friends at the Record Hospital, that was called, a show on WHRB. And they flogged it like crazy, and the DJs were behind us, and we had a demo tape out, and we went really well.
Were you quite serious about it then? Was it even though you just got...
Not at all.
No?
Not at all. It's always just for fun.
So straight away, it was... People started to... people started to like it. Yeah. So was that the first sort of professional booking you had? It all came from that one moment?
Yeah, yep, yep.
Wow.
At the Rat, it's called, in Boston.
What was in the set?
We knew a bunch of songs. Of course, we did I Want to Be Your Boyfriend by the Ramones, like every band is supposed to. And we did some really obscure Canadian punk, like The Forgotten Rebels, I Think of You. We did some covers. We did Ice by, not the Nomads, that's they're from Sweden, but this Australian band, Screaming Tribesmen. We did a Screaming Tribesmen cover. We were just into a lot of eclectic punk rock music, and we did some covers, and we had like maybe already had 12 or so originals.
It was quite a short time before the first single kind of came out. What was that?
It was simultaneous, pretty much. It was a way of getting a gig. Back then, you could just press a single and you could get a gig.
What was it?
It was okay. It was a 4-song EP, short songs, on 45. I mean, it just didn't cost much to make.
Was this the point where you started to take it seriously, when you were like...
I guess so, to an extent. We were really just doing it in the summer because people were going to school and stuff. And eventually I figured out being the only dropout in the band wasn't a winning situation. So I just got with other dropouts eventually.
And what would you say your first breakthrough was then, in terms of kind of mainstream success?
Germany, I think. Germany was the first place. We were playing to like 2,000 more people a night, and in America we were still playing to 300 to 500 people. The Germans, you know, once you get big here, they tend to not like you as much, I've noticed, actually. But so they like to discover things there, and they were just well into American guitar music then, sort of before here. Like Mudhoney and us and stuff were going over there and doing great, whereas in America we weren't really doing that well. So we were all in the same boat back then. It was before any kind of classification of that kind of... It was just called guitar, you know, Dinosaur and us and Mudhoney and Tad and whatever. And so it was like, those were the fun times, you know, before things got all... It's kind of serious and big and stuff. So that was like a really fun time.
When was your first trip to the UK? Because we've always heard...
89, Fulham Greyhound.
Yeah, as the UK, have always kind of been... We've always had a certain affection for the Lemonheads.
Yeah.
What was your first trip like? Fulham Greyhound, you said?
Yeah, it was really fun. We were really not good at a show, but people really liked a lot. And then, you know, we got some funny reviews and stuff, and it was good. And we had someone ahead, that guy... Ralph Trader from the Barracudas. He used to work for Sounds, and he did a premiere of On Us in Berlin. And so by the time we got here, it was kind of a big deal. We were playing like a proper pub gig in Fulham Greyhound, and it was really full and hot and fun.
And you always liked England as a place to be?
Definitely, yeah.
Okay, what was the first hit then? I suppose Luca would be the sort of possibly the thing that maybe... crossed over commercially.
Yeah.
Well, when did you first decide to kind of release that kind of a standalone track?
That was the other song we just learned because it was on the radio so much, our first tour in 87 in the summer. And just by default, we learned it, and Curtis really liked it, our record label, from the guy from Tang, and we recorded it totally as a joke, and...
So it wasn't even serious?
No. See, that's the theme here. I mean, and Mrs. Robinson thing, that was really not on purpose. That was really like a thing that we just did in 3 hours because we liked the movie, The Graduate.
Mrs. Robinson, Heaven holds a place for those who pray. Hey, hey, hey. Hey, hey, hey. We'd like to know a little bit about you for our files. We'd like to help you learn to help yourself. Look around you, all you see are sympathetic eyes. Stroll around the grounds until you feel at home. And here's to you, Mrs. Robinson. Jesus loves you more than you will know. Whoa, whoa, whoa. God bless you, please, Mrs. Robinson. Heaven holds a place for those who pray. Hey, hey, hey. Hey, hey, hey. Hiding place where no one ever goes. Put it in your pantry with your cupcakes. It's a little secret just for Robinson's affair. Most of all, you got to hide it from the kids. Look at you, Mrs. Robinson. Jesus loves you more than you will know. Whoa, whoa, whoa. God bless you, please, Mrs. Robinson. Heaven holds a place for those who pray. Hey, hey, hey. Hey, hey, hey. Sitting on a sofa on a Sunday afternoon. Going to a candidate's debate. Laugh about it, shout about it when you got to choose. Every way you look at it, you lose.
It opened a lot of doors for you.
Yeah.
In terms of first, when was the first time that you realised the record now is kind of becoming something pretty large?
It was during a tour here, where
in the UK
started getting out of control. We were coming down from Scotland, which is getting really, really more and more crazy. And
so like what?
Just more and more people outside and not being able to get in, and just very, you know, just real. It was fun.
This is about the time you started being called a sex symbol.
Something like that.
Something like that. Does that still bore you massively?
No, I don't. I take it or leave it. Yeah, I don't really. No. It's just sort of silly. It tends to take people sort of, I think over the years, don't take the music seriously because of stuff like that. So that's the only thing I can say against it.
When was the first time you kind of started to feel uncomfortable with the level of attention that you were getting?
It was more the kind of attention. I didn't really mind the level of attention. I mean, just it was all the wrong kind of attention, a lot of it. Just, you know, focusing on serious, silly things.
No, what? Like what I just
not
said?
Not music, yeah. Anything but the music.
Tell me about your first Glastonbury, because that's obviously a massive part of musical history in the UK.
93. I missed my plane. I got thrown off my plane. I was taking a bunch of Quaaludes and stuff, and I ran across the... I just got a credit card for the first time, and I ran and got a first class seat in British Airways, and who was up there but Phil Collins. And so that was really weird.
Was he nice?
No, thank God. I hate it when you meet someone's music you don't like and they're really nice. No, he wasn't nice.
So you got chucked off?
The first plane, yeah, but then so I was like, I'm gonna go first class, and I made it. I didn't make the gig in 95. Missed one. I was bound to miss one up there.
What did you make of your first Glastonbury? Did you enjoy it?
Oh, yeah, it was great. It was great. It was tons of people and stuff. It was really fun.
It was about this point where kind of you said sort of things started to, people started talking about things other than the music. I mean, the kind of your sort of drug use had been talked about a lot. Was there a kind of point when you started to feel like...
I just feel like outing it, why not talk about it openly and be really stupid, like break all the rules and tell the truth. You know, I just felt like it felt right at the time.
Do you regret doing that?
No, I mean, not really. Not enough people really. I mean, like, it's not really smart, I guess, but I don't regret it.
Was there a point when you started to think that you didn't want to do music anymore? Was, you know, was there kind of...
No, I just did. I just stopped when I stopped enjoying it. I just stopped for a while. I took some vacations that lasted like 5 years.
Which you did, yeah. I mean, what was the... Was that just a very sort of conscious... decision to stop playing for a while, or did it just happen?
When I didn't enjoy it anymore, I just stopped. Quite easy.
And what did you do during the time out?
Just traveled around, visited friends, you know, rented some houses and stuff, and just did normal things.
When was the first time you sort of picked up a guitar again and sort of started writing?
Well, I was always playing and stuff at home, but I took a break from playing live. I took one short break, well, from like 94 till 96, including one missed gig in 95.
Just the one.
Yeah. Yep. And then I did a year tour then, and then I kind of left till 2001 or something and came back. I've been pretty much playing straight from then again.
You released a solo record. Was that a decisive decision to kind of not be under the Lemonheads banner very distinctly?
Yeah, I was really proud of that record, so I just decided to try something different with the name of it.
Was that an idea of not returning to the Lemonheads thing?
Yeah,
because it's kind of you anyway, isn't it? I mean, you know,
there's no real point. I just thought it would, you know, it just felt like a solo record. It was a little different from the rest of them. And then when I got, you know, the lineup I would have wanted all along in the Lemonheads when I started with Bill Stevenson and Carl Alvarez, I decided to call it Lemonheads again because it was real loud and more louder. And so it didn't seem like a solo record. That was 06. That's why I got the name back again.
I suppose the final question has to be, if we've been talking about all these first kind of events, first events and the first things, what's the last thing that you've heard that you've really, really loved that we can play?
Farewell Angelina, that Bob Dylan song I've been listening to. You know that song?
What is it about the song?
It's just really pretty, and I heard it the other day.
Farewell Farewell, Angelina, the bells of the crown are being stolen by bandits. I must follow the sound. The triangle tingles, the music plays slow. But farewell, Angelina, the night is on fire and I must go. There is no use in talking and there's no need for blame. There is nothing to prove, everything still is the same. A table stands empty by the edge of the stream. But farewell, Angelina, the sky's changing colors and I must leave. The jacks and the queens, they forsake the courtyard. Fifty-two gypsies now file past the guard. In the space where the deuce and the ace once ran wild. Farewell, Angelina, the sky is folding, I'll see you after a while. See the cross-eyed pirate sit perched in the sun, shooting tin cans with a sawed-off shotgun. And the corporals and neighbors clap and cheer with each blast. But farewell, Angelina, the sky it is trembling and I must leave fast. King Kong, little elves, in the rooftops they dance. Valentino type tangos while the heroes clean hands. Shut the eyes of the dead, not to embarrass anyone. Farewell, Angelina, the sky's flooding over and I must be gone. Camouflage parrot, he flutters from fear. When something he doesn't know about suddenly appears. What cannot be imitated, perfect must die. Farewell, Angelina, the sky is flooding over and I must go where it is dry. Machine guns are roaring, puppets heave rocks at misunderstood visions and at the faces of clocks. Call me any name you like, I will never deny it. But farewell, Angelina. The sky is erupting, and I must go where it is quiet.
Six Music.
This is
Six Music.
After they took I from the bottomless pit, but my hand was made strong by the hand of the Almighty. We forward in this generation triumphantly. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever have, redemption songs, redemption songs. Emancipate yourselves from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our minds. Have no fear for atomic energy, 'cause none of them can stop the time. How long shall they kill our prophets while we stand aside and look? Ooh, some say it's just a part of it. We've got to fulfill the book. Won't you help to sing?
This is BBC Radio 6
Music. 6 Music. 6 Music.